You're listening to Mountain Talk here on WMMT FM 88.7 in Whitesburg, Kentucky. This is a special edition of Mountain Talk. I'm Mark Kidd. I'm going to be hosting today as part of the Community Farm Alliance Breaking Beans Project. It's an Appalachian food story project that's part of the Community Farm Alliance's mission to tell the story of how local food and farming in eastern Kentucky can contribute to a bright future in the mountains. So that's the Breaking Bean Project, which has been a chance to get together with some fine folks who've been involved in different ways with the school garden at Pikeville Elementary. And this is a garden that has been getting a lot of attention, in part due to the way that its use of social media and storytelling and technology have become part of a project that's also doing something very unique with the school garden in eastern Kentucky. So we've got a full group of people here today in the studio with us, and I'd like to give everybody a chance to kind of introduce themselves and talk a little bit about who they are and why they're here for this week's Mountain Talk.
Hi, I'm Tracy Tackett, and I'm a teacher at Pikeville Elementary and Pikeville High School. I teach gifted education. This is my 26th year in education, and I'm so excited to be a part of the school garden at Pikeville Elementary, where we just have a great time every day going out and growing at our school.
Hi, I'm Sarah Belcher. I'm a sixth grader at Pikeville Elementary School, and I'm in the garden program and the STLP, which is a student technology leadership program.
Hi, my name's Mary Belcher. I'm Sarah's mother and also one of the instructional supervisors for Pikeville Independent, and just so excited about all the work that's been going on at our elementary with our garden.
I'm Kathy Raymeyer, and around these parts, I'm no more as Mother of a Hubbard. That's my gardening blog. Believe it or not, here in eastern Kentucky, we have a top 10 better homes and gardening blogger, and so I write for that. But more importantly, my daytime job is as associate professor of pathology at the Kentucky College of Osteopathic Medicine. So I'm a big believer in the tie between food and health, and I'm happy to be the mentor for the school garden at Pikeville Elementary.
Well, and I think one thing we see with this project, like a lot of projects with the community leaders, is that all of the different backgrounds and activities of a very diverse group of people comes together to make things possible. So hopefully over the course of the next hour, we'll get to hear about the intersections that have brought these folks together around one particular place at the Pikeville Elementary School. And I was wondering if you all could help set the scene a little bit. If we were to visit the grounds of the Pikeville Elementary School sometime this week, what would we be seeing?
Well, this week our garden is alive. Lots of things are going on, getting ready for some spring planting and also cleaning out some beds to prepare for those new crops. And we're also harvesting some last-minute salads to provide our school cafeteria with salad, which we've been able to do. I think it's been 8 days so far, and so we're super excited about that. But the way our garden is laid out is in the back of our school. There was an area that was not being used for anything. It was very sunny back there. It's close to the cafeteria back door. And so it's a little rolling grassy knoll that is kind of narrow. And we placed three raised beds going terraced up that little hill, step by step. And at the bottom in a flat area, there's a greenhouse with our composting bin right next to it. And the next project, which is kind of a weedy area off to the right of our garden section, is the soon-to-be pollinator garden, because as we've learned about plants, we've also learned about the necessity of having pollinators so that we don't have to hand pollinate all of those plants. So we are going to plant the flowers that would be natural attractors for pollinators and try to get them established in our garden area. So we're real excited about that, and it's a beautiful little place to us because we've had so much success with just these three raised beds.
And so this is really an area that's the size of a rather small backyard for a lot of houses, and it's got the same kind of slope that we'd see around here a lot too. And could you say again how many meals has that garden supplied the salad for so far this school year?
Well, we have supplied quite a few meals from the garden beds. We have a wide variety of crops planted in a very small amount of space. Kathy came up with the idea of having themed garden beds, and I love the idea. We were also excited about it. She made garden plans for us so that the students could actually see what we were going to be planting and where each of those seeds were going to be planted. And they've been great reference for us as the plants have started to grow, because the students can go back and look and say, oh, that's the pak choi or a certain variety of kale. We have, getting back to the meals we've provided, we've created, I would say, 8 full salads for our entire school from those kale patches. And we have also had a huge stir-fry lesson that Kathy came to school and did for the students. And that was from the stir-fry garden. And there was broccoli, sweet peas, carrots, 4 types of kale, 2 types of pak choi. Oh, I know I'm forgetting some things, but she made it wonderful. Oh, turnips. How could I forget turnips? Mm-hmm. Those are the students' favorite vegetable now. And they just begged her to make sure they had turnips in their dish of stir fry as she served it to them. But we've also given away greens from the garden to teachers who have shown interest, and other people in the community that have shown interest. We've given them greens, and so that is also spreading interest.
And the time of year for these donations to the school cafeteria is very important too, because this isn't in August or September when most gardens around here are plentiful. They served coleslaw from cabbage and carrots that they harvested just prior to Thanksgiving, everyone leaving for Thanksgiving break. They served a big kale salad right before the Christmas break. And they were even outdoors harvesting today for more salad for the students to eat in the cafeteria.
Well, this might be a good moment to jump to a description of something that does make this garden distinct from a lot of other school gardens, which is the time of year that it's growing, which, from my understanding, is some of the technology that that you all have been able to use. And I know you, Kathy, have written about this extensively on your blog, but some of this low tunnel technology has been really instrumental in making it possible to put in a garden at the same time when there are students on the campus. Could you describe a little bit for us what a low tunnel is, just so people who are listening to this might be able to get an idea? And I'll mention, we'll also, once this broadcast has been posted on the WMMT website, and also the Community Farm Alliance will blog about it, there'll be some photographs. But for people who are listening right now, what does a low tunnel look like, and how is it put together?
Sure. You know, the closest thing that most people would have experience with and understanding how a low tunnel works are cold frames, which are boxes with a window or clear plastic sheeting over them, and the idea being to trap the energy from the sun to warm a bed. And low tunnels operate on the same principle. Essentially, they're PVC pipe, just white PVC pipe, about 10 feet in length, that's anchored on each side and stretched in an arc over a garden bed. And they're spaced about 5 feet apart and looks like a tunnel. And then you have your choice of what you're going to protect the plants within that tunnel with, and that can be clear plastic sheeting, which we used primarily last year at the school garden, that has advantages and disadvantages to it. But this year, mainly what we're using is a fabric row cover. It's just a woven polypropylene row cover that allows air and water to pass through, but still provides some frost protection, freeze protection, for the plants within. And to give you some kind of idea of how much protection, in last year's polar vortex, which we got down to -8 Fahrenheit in Pikeville, the plants in my garden weathered that event very nicely. And last year's inaugural school garden, many of the plants within there weathered those temperatures very well also.
And that's one of the things that caught my attention, was the fact that this These low tunnels, which are really seem to be constructed with the kind of materials that you can find in most places, and are not don't require heaters or a lot of expensive materials to construct were lasting through last year's polar vortex. And I think that that's one of the things that really seems attractive about this model, is that it's something that folks could build in their own backyard, but we've actually had recent reason to believe it can weather some of the worst weather that that we have here in the winter and still not result in a lot of losses. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Mountain Talk. This is part of the Community Farm Alliance Breaking Beans conversation about the Pikeville Elementary School Garden. And I want to turn right now for a minute to Sarah. As a student that's been involved in various ways with the garden for the last couple of years, I've got a couple of different questions for you, but one takes us back to what we were hearing earlier about all of these meals that have been able to incorporate produce from the garden at the school. And I know that one of the ways that this year's garden was selected was kind of feedback from last year. So what are some of the foods that are popular, and what have you learned about what some of your classmates and other students are interested in terms of what they're going to eat from this garden?
Well, like Ms. Tackett said, turnips are definitely a favorite of the students. And really, they love it in the salad at the schools. Pretty much everything the students like.
So one thing that I think that might be surprising to a lot of folks your age and older who have a conception that young people just innately don't want to eat fresh produce. What I guess I'm hearing, though, is that there's a demand for it. So how was last year's feedback taken into account, or can you say, when you guys designed what you're going to be planting this year?
Well, I'll have to think about that for a second.
Fair enough.
Well, last year we didn't plant as large a variety of vegetables as we have this year. It was primarily greens, oriental greens, some kale, lettuce. And we learned that the students had never heard of kale, had never eaten kale, but they loved it. And so this year we had a focus. We definitely want to plant a lot of kale. And so one of our themed beds was a rainbow kale garden bed. And rainbow kale is not a variety of kale, but we planted it in the shape of a rainbow. And so each arc in the rainbow is a different variety of kale. So the students learned about the different colorations, the different shapes of the leaves, red Russian kale, lacinato kale, blue curled scotch, and red boar were the four varieties we planted. And it was fun watching it grow in the arches. And then in the corners of the arch, we planted mosh, which is a new vegetable for me, a new green. It's a small green that doesn't even germinate until the temperatures are really cool. So we had to plant that later, but it filled in those empty spaces around the rainbow, and that has been a favorite bed. And we had that bed specifically because last year the students showed such a great interest in kale. This year the interest has been in turnips. They want to eat them like apples. Just slice it, salt it, pop it in their mouth. So next year our focus will definitely be to increase the turnip patch and possibly have different varieties of turnips so that they can see the differences and the different tastes. Some are more spicy and some are mild. So that will be a focus for us in the future, is to expand the things they liked this year, but maybe different varieties of that.
I know when we think about Appalachia, some of the images that come to my mind have to do with kind of a tradition of agriculture and family gardens. But I'm wondering, do a lot of the students come into this project with experience they've had at home, or are they more like me, where I was around gardens growing up, but I don't seem to have really retained a lot of it? Are people bringing some of that traditional Appalachian gardening to this, or is this more a side of teach where that's being taught? How does it kind of fit into that image that we have?
Well, in Appalachia, we've all grown up with our grandparents gardening, or parents or neighbors. I think every child has had someone in their life that has been a gardener, but it's probably been that they were a summer gardener and they were growing corn and tomatoes and cucumbers and canning beans and putting away food for the winter. But this is a whole new concept, because we are actually growing food in the winter, and we're not having to preserve greens we can just go outside and pick them, even in January and February. So it's an old concept, but a new twist on it. And I think students have, even though they've seen gardening, they haven't actively been participating. A lot of the kids say, yeah, my grandfather has a garden or my grandparents' garden, but they haven't been included. But they're showing so much interest that they're going home and asking. One student asked for a garden for his birthday, and I think that speaks volumes to how much he enjoys it, that he would want that for his birthday gift.
And I was wondering, one of the things I guess I'd like to ask, and I think you partly answered it, though, let me make sure I'm understanding, that this this project is probably, it sounds like the first time a lot of students and their parents are hearing about winter gardening. Is that fair to say?
Yes, and not only students and parents, but other teachers in our school are seeing the garden, and they are tasting the salad at lunch, and they're saying it is so much better when we have a little sign that sits out on the counter that says enjoy a salad from the school garden. And so they're almost eagerly watching for that sign because they want the fresher greens, and they like the consistency of the crunchy kale. And that is causing teachers to come to us asking, can you do a workshop to teach us how to do this at home next year, because we love it so much, and we've gone to the store and bought kale because we like yours, but it doesn't taste the same. So I think the interest from parents, students, and fellow teachers is growing because of this.
Well, I was very impressed by how active on social media this project was, and I think that's how I heard about it. And I was wondering if Sarah could talk a little bit about the ways that technology is a part of the whole the project and the work that the young people are doing at the school right now.
Yes, the STLP, they have a Twitter account, and they have recently posted many different videos on YouTube, some with the worm farm. There's three of those. And then they have some on cabbage worms and some different things with the garden. And also, they have done public service announcements that has been able to get it out there more.
And is my understanding right, have you been involved in any of these STLP-related projects with the garden?
Yes, we have done a video with Kathy showing us how to make stir-fry, and some others, too. We were recently working on some more public service announcements that will be coming out soon, hopefully.
I think I saw one on cabbage worms that we'll have to link from our blog post about this. I was wondering how you chose the topics for some of your videos.
Well, we each have our own specific thing that we worked in a bit more than the others. So really, we took what we have done the most and we made our videos on it.
And so which one did you work on the most? Is that the...
Oh, I did a tour of our garden, which is on our school website. And there should be a link on YouTube for it.
And we'll make sure we get a link to that when we put up the show online, too.
Some of the videos are just in the process of being uploaded. Mm-hmm. So check back frequently. The library is being built this week, actually. We had 5 videos posted to the YouTube channel, and we have 2 or 3 more ready to go. And so you can check out the Pikeville Elementary School website, and we have a link to the school garden, and you can find all of our video library topics there. It's all student-generated work, and each child created a video based on what they felt like they enjoyed the most and had learned the most about. So there are topics: how to create your own worm farm, how to harvest worm castings, how to use worm castings in your garden, how to build a low tunnel, how to detect cabbage worms, which is really cute. There are a couple about composting, and then Sarah's, you'll definitely want to check that out because it gives a tour around our little school garden.
Kathy, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more in detail about this, the low tunnel. And for people who are just joining us, the topic for today's Mountain Talk is the Pikeville Elementary School Garden. And we've got a number of folks here live in the studio that have been involved in the garden in a few different ways. In some of our previous conversations, we've been talking about how the low tunnel is not just a kind of affordable way to garden throughout the winter months in Eastern Kentucky. But it's also a pretty suitable choice for our climate here. And so I guess I'd be wondering first, how did you get involved with Low Tunnels? And then more specifically, kind of what do you see the messages for Eastern Kentucky with this this model that you've been helping describe and helping people learn about?
Sure. Yeah, I became interested in low tunnel technology primarily from my interest in growing as much food as I could for my family. My husband and my daughter have a food sensitivity to gluten, which is in a lot of processed foods, and so it was very important to us to grow as much as we could so that we could avoid cross-contamination of gluten in foods that you might not suspect it in, including frozen vegetables. Gluten's something that's in bread and beer, but sometimes it does show up in processed foods. So in my desire to grow as much food as I could for my family, I started investigating all year growing and came across the works of Elliot Coleman, who's an organic farmer in Maine. And his primary season for growing and what he's known for starts about November and it runs through February. And it's all in using unheated structures. And I thought, well, gee, if Elliot Coleman can do this in Maine, surely I can do this in Kentucky. And so over the years, I've just started experimenting based on books that he had. But really, our climate here in Kentucky is very conducive to using these low tunnel structures. A lot of people don't understand that even though we're in the mountains, that doesn't mean our climate is terribly harsh. You know, people talk about us being in the mountains and, our higher elevation must make things so much colder. But actually, we're at a lower elevation in Pikeville than Lexington. Lexington is about 1,000 feet above elevation, and my Kentucky garden is at about 670. So elevation doesn't have anything to do with it. Actually, our hillsides and our mountains around us are actually a benefit because we don't get those straight line winds that the rest of Kentucky, where it's more flat, typically get. And if you're growing in winter, wind is not your friend. Wind is drying out to plants, and really that's the big danger for plants. It's not so much the cold temperatures. They can handle those pretty okay. I've had lettuce that survived in my low tunnels down to 12 degrees Fahrenheit, just being protected from the wind and the drying effects of winter. So certainly us being nestled down in the mountains, that gives us an advantage compared to the rest of the state. So lots of pluses to that. And, you know, even though I'm a university professor and a garden blogger, I'm also a market gardener. I actually grow enough food on the side that I sell it. And I'm hoping to have more land to be able to sell more because there's such a desire for it in Pikeville and the surrounding area. But what I'm really hoping is that I can inspire other farmers in the area to try this out because it's very minimal inputs here. There's no heat that's required in the structures. These structures are very, very inexpensive compared to the main technology that most growers in the state are using, which are bigger versions called high tunnels. And I can cover the same area of ground as one of these high tunnel structures, say a 40 by 60 foot area, for a tenth of the cost. So rather than putting in $3,500 for a high tunnel, I can get started winter growing for about $350 for that same 40 by 60 foot area. And so that makes it very attractive for particularly small farms that want to be able to extend their market.
And so is there anything that, if there's one other thing that somebody who has some experience with spring and summer gardening or conventional agriculture should know about the difference between what they might be used to and what a low tunnel will offer? What final words could we say about kind of the distinction between the two?
Well, you can think of winter gardening, fall and winter gardening, as being very similar to spring and summer, but with no work or very little work. You know, spring and summer, you're out there fighting weeds, you're fighting bugs, you're fighting plant diseases, And in fall and winter, you know, fall, there's more work, yes. You're getting the garden established. Much of the, we talk about gardening in winter, but really much of the work is done starting in August and September and October and getting things planted. You know, for instance, if you're going to grow broccoli, you're going to have to get that in the ground by August 15th if it's going to have time to mature. So there's a lot of upfront work in August and September and October, but by the time cool temperatures arrive in November, and especially with the lower amount of light that we get in a day, really it's easy gardening from that point on. It's just making sure that you've got the protective structure over the tunnels, and really everything just holds out in the field, almost like you've got this huge outdoor refrigerator, and all the plants are alive out there, and they're just holding out there in the field. And essentially the only work you have to do is to go out and to harvest. So if you like it an easy job, then fall and winter gardening is likely for you.
Great. I think that's kind of, that sounds appealing to a lot of folks, like if they're, especially if they're like me. I know that the idea of a weedless a winter garden, it sounds perfect for those months when you don't often have access to the farmer's market, at least in our county here in Letcher. And so we've heard a little bit about what makes winter gardening with low tunnels a little different from what some people's other gardening experiences might have been like. I was hoping to hear a little bit more about what it's like in a school program when low tunnels have been incorporated, so we have more access to the garden throughout the school year. What is that like? And that'll help us get an idea what it's what's different if it's possible to have students in the garden throughout the school year.
Well, I have a coworker, and he's always, since I've been working with him, he said, we need to have a school garden. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. I do not want to come to school all summer and work to maintain a garden when there are no students here. It will just, I don't know how that will be possible. So after attending one of Kathy's winter garden workshops, I started thinking, maybe we could do some planting. Never dreamed to the level we are, to the point we're at this year, but maybe we could implement planting a few things that the students could actually watch grow during our school year, which is primarily fall and winter months, and then early spring we get out of school. So by growing greens and root crops, the students have been able to learn about germination, soil. They've learned about keeping up with the weather patterns, because we have to close the low tunnels when it drops down, when the weather drops down colder, and then vent them when the weather, when we have a 60-degree day. So, you know, there have been so many things the kids have learned, and without doing it through the fall and winter, I don't know how else we could, and I'm sure Kathy can elaborate on this more.
Yeah, I would just like to add to that. You know, I am appreciative of all school garden programs, and I like the idea of both summer and winter. But to me, winter has a big plus, if only for the fact that it encourages kids to eat greens. yeah, it doesn't take much to entice a child to eat a tomato or corn or watermelon, something that they've had prior experience with at home. But let's face it, not a lot of Americans do a good job, and we have the statistics out there to show it, of getting their daily greens. And to see these kids be so enthusiastic about getting out in the garden and grabbing mustard, spicy mustard leaves, and eating them right there in the garden, or to be so excited about eating turnips, you know, it doesn't take much to convince a child to try a tomato, but to get them to eat those greens, it's so important. And it's just a gateway. These are gateway gardens to just encouraging kids to expand their palates in ways that maybe many adults wouldn't anticipate.
That's definitely something I've noticed. Just from last year, one little girl said, Miss Taggett, last year I didn't like mustard at all. It was just too spicy, and now it's my favorite. She tries to find the most mature leaves with the largest stem, and they are the most spicy leaves out there, and that's what she chooses to eat. And then I have kids sneak to my classroom and ask if they can go out and pick a snack. And they brought money to my room wanting to buy turnips, and they've asked me for turnips for Christmas. And it's just story after story of their enthusiasm and how much they enjoy eating the vegetables. And 9 out of 10 kids, if you'll say, what's your favorite part? They'll say, eating. And I've had kids say, I don't like turnips, not turnips, but carrots. I don't like carrots that I buy at the store, but I like the carrots from our garden. And I think part of that is the fact that they were involved in growing it. And then we've learned from Kathy that in the winter, the carrots and the root crops develop sugars to keep them from freezing. And that makes them taste better. They're much sweeter, and the kids are noticing the differences in the taste. So we're just real excited about the experimentation of students with these new foods.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it's also kind of encouraging to hear. What I keep hearing is how some of the ways that students are interacting with the gardens are really kind of influencing the way you guys are creating the program. What are you learning from the most this year? In other words, as you guys are starting the school year and thinking about what's going to happen in the spring and next fall, what are some of the things you're hoping to accomplish, or what's coming up down the in the future for the Pikeville Elementary Garden Program?
Well, this week we have started cleaning out some of the beds. Of course, the turnip patch is completely empty, and some of the greens that were less hardy than the kale, like some of the pak choi, those beds need to be cleaned out. And the students have had a worm farm where they've been collecting worm castings, and they are mixing that into the soil and prepping it and getting it ready for some spring plants that they are starting. Some of these are already out in the greenhouse. We have flats of kale that are ready to go, turnips, and we have tomatoes that are starting inside under some grow lights that will then be, part of those will be donated to the community. We have a program where the students go out to the assisted living in Pikeville and plant with the residents, which was a huge hit last year. The residents loved being with the children, and the children loved being with the seniors, and so we definitely want to continue that. And we've also started a partnership with our local men's homeless shelter. They have raised beds at their shelter, 3 raised beds that we planted kale and mustard in for fall, and then we want to go back this spring and give them some tomatoes that we've started to help keep their food supply going, because it's hard to feed that, you know, a lot of people, and so that just builds self-sustainability for them also.
If a person goes to look at your project on the web right now, they might see something that I noticed on the website called Planet for the Planet. I may not have said that too well. Plant it for the planet. I was wondering if Sarah knows anything about that project, and if so, if she could, or somebody else could, kind of tell our audience a little bit about what's going on with that part of the garden.
That is our Twitter account, and we will post different things on gardening tips and what the weather might be like if you need to put your agarbond fabric on it. It's a very good way to be able to get your garden and help to where you can be able to do those things too.
And so students, is this a part of the work that students have been doing in that STLP program at the elementary?
Yes, it is.
And so some of these these tools that are being used, they're part of people's projects for STLP. Okay, and I think I've seen that then. It seems like it's got an automated temperature readout with frost alerts, if I've noticed it right. So we have kind of a system that's got some human inputs then, and then also it's connected to a sensor or some sort of alert service. And again, we'll have links to some of the things we're talking about on the web when we post this online. But that's a part of the Planet for the Planet. And it looked like, Tracy, do you have something else you had to add about that subject?
Last year we started researching ways to save energy for the STLP project we were doing, and we learned that huge amounts of energy are used to get a salad from the place it is grown to your grocery store. And through transportation costs and packaging fees and everything is added on, and it's a huge amount of energy that's wasted. So we thought if we could promote backyard gardening through the STLP project with our little small raised bed that we started with last year, that we would plant it for the planet in hopes of saving energy by just being able to grow food in your own backyard rather than it being transported across the United States.
And so we'll have to keep up with how this campaign moves forward for you all. But I think that the energy that I've seen is contagious so far. One thing that we also might want to mention that came up a minute ago is this worm farm. I believe it's come up twice today, and I was wondering whether somebody here could describe that part of the way that the school garden, it sounds like, has become integrated a little bit into the more than one classroom. Is that correct, or have I got the details wrong?
It has. Once we started gardening, it kind of branched off into different things, like the pollinators and worms. How do you have good soil quality? Well, worms improve the quality of your soil, so we created a worm farm. Sarah was one of the girls that actually made the worm farm, and she doesn't care to touch worms, I can tell you that. But other students who don't come to my class were interested in what was going on, so we made this worm farm a traveling unit, and we created materials that the teacher could use, gave them the information they needed to know about worms, and the worm farm and a huge anatomy of the worm. It's like a large stuffed worm that you can unzip and see the intestines of the worm. That, along with the teaching unit and the worm farm, go out to different classrooms where they kind of worm sit for the week and learn about worms, and the kids that come to my class can teach their classmates. So we are trying to integrate what we're doing out into the whole school in small ways like that, and we've had field trips where classrooms came out to the garden and the students would teach the other students in their class, and that was a huge success. The kids loved having classmates for their teacher, and it let more kids be exposed to what we're doing.
You've mentioned also that that some of the students are interested in hosting a more formal workshop on the low gardens that would be had. If I understood it right, parents would be invited to that as well. Could we talk a little bit about that idea and some of the other ways that students have been kind of involved in, and again, spreading this information that I don't think has been very readily known around here?
Yes, we've actually scheduled a date for the workshop, and it's going to be open to parents and teachers, and that will be April the 30th after school from 3:30 to 5, and we are also planning to host that online so that people could log in and watch it virtually from home or through their computer, and we haven't set up the actual account for that yet. But if anybody is interested in participating in that, they can email me at Pikeville Elementary School, and we would be happy to spread that information. But it will be on our school webpage when everything is a little bit more detailed, scheduled more.
Great. We're glad to hear that. So, again, there's going to be a workshop at Pikeville Elementary on April the 30th from 3:30 to 5 p.m., that's going to be after school ends at Pikeville Elementary. So you can learn some of this in person, or you'll be able to search for that and find an online version of the training. So you can get some experience, at least get your eyes on the format and kind of see how straightforward these low tunnels are to build and maintain. And again, kind of thinking about some of the ways that these workshops, the social media account that you all are using, and Kathy's blog have been part of a conversation in Eastern Kentucky about what does it mean to have a garden, to have a culture with fresh food and schools, and not just schools, as Kathy pointed out earlier. Kathy, I know you've gotten some really positive attention from the Better Homes and Gardens for the work you've been doing on your blog. Could you tell us a little bit about how that blog works? And I know that's one place that people can find information on these low tunnels and on the Pikeville Elementary project. This is the Mother of a Hubbard blog.
Sure, yeah. Any of our listeners can go to www.motherofahubbard.com. Hubbard as in a big, enormous squash that's really more popular up in the northern U.S., but it's a big not so fibrous squash, very sweet, that I like to grow. But I have a lot of materials that I share freely on that blog that I would encourage people to check if you are interested in growing really any season of the year, even though I kind of specialize in fall and winter growing since there's not a lot of information out there on it. I have planting guides. You know, there is a lot of upfront preparation to growing in fall and winter. You can't wait until Thanksgiving to decide that you want to have a winter garden. Mm. You have to go ahead and have things planted as early as August and September. And so I have a planting dates calendar along with about 30 varieties of vegetables and herbs that people could be growing in their gardens. And I try to provide it down to the cultivars. So for instance, not just tell you that you can grow kale, but recommend specific varieties of kale, like Red Russian, that are particularly cold hardy. In addition to that, I've got a lot of different recipes on there in case people want to know, well, now that I've grown it, what do I do with it? So those are available on there as well. And I've recently, because of the national interest in what I do and the statewide interest, I'm actually working on a book right now. It's called Garden Undercover, and you can go to www.gardenundercover.com to sign up for when that will be released in ebook format. But it's mainly targeted to backyard gardeners, but also market gardeners, people that want to make a little bit of income from selling produce on the side. Exactly all the details in one spot about how to do that. I'm a big believer in sharing what I've learned, both freely on the blog and then in this upcoming ebook, and through workshops that I've done at the local level, but also at the state level. I'm going to be speaking in March at the Organic Association of Kentucky. I just spoke back in January at the Kentucky Fruit and Vegetable Conference. Like I said, this is getting a lot of attention from people about this innovative way to garden throughout the year. And so it's very important to me to share that information, because I do see it as an additional way that folks around here can make some income in that agricultural off season if they choose to do that.
Thank you. We're speaking this hour on Mountain Talk about the Pikeville Elementary School garden. We're also talking about low tunnels as a method for growing gardens throughout the year in eastern Kentucky. And we've been hearing stories and advice and feedback and experiences from a variety of perspectives about this from pretty much every angle. Although I do hate to put somebody on the spot, but I was wondering if Mary would be willing to speak a little bit from who's a parent of Sarah, who's here with us in the studio, and also has some experience in the school system, but not directly with this garden project. This is a period in eastern Kentucky, and maybe every period is like this, but I think especially so when people are talking not just about how what kind of school system we need for the future, but also talking about the kind of a economy we need for the future and the foods that we need for the future. To have a project like this going on in the elementary school where you've got a family enrolled, I was wondering if, you know, what your perspective is. We hear that it's difficult to get things done in the schools, but certainly this seems like a bright spot. So what's the experience been like as a parent, or how do you think this kind of fits into the role that education has, public education, in eastern Kentucky?
Well, I'm very excited about everything that Ms. Tackett and Dr. Raymeyer have been doing with our students. My daughter comes home, and I will say that we are definitely looking at planting a fall-winter garden this next year. I think one of the best things about this is it's kind of helped revive in our students an interest in our heritage with gardening. And Sarah is so excited when she comes home, and she'll tell things about that's happened with the garden, and that, like, when she was building the worm farm. It's just something that's helping to educate our students on things that we have done in the past but kind of reopening eyes, I guess, but in a different way, like Ms. Tackett was talking about. So that really excites me for our students at Pikeville. I've got to be out there at times and see the kids with the garden and just the excitement and the smiles and the joy that they have in being out there. You know, we always talk about, you know, kids not being outside enough. You know, this is encouraging that and that interest of eating things that are green and just, you know, being connected back with nature and, you know, learning things that are very important for them as they grow older.
Thanks. And as we're coming close to the end of our conversation for tonight, I'm gonna ask you a question, Sarah, and feel free, you could answer a different question than the one I ask you if you want. But if you imagine somebody maybe your age that's in our listening audience tonight, but it's from a different school, do you have one or two things? How would you describe this project to them, or what advice would you give them if they were interested in kind of learning about what's exciting about the garden or the work that you've been doing with STLP? What advice would you give me if I were just maybe going to start a garden like this at my own school?
The advice?
Sure, if you've got some.
Okay. Definitely these plants, they are a much richer vegetable that do taste better. And if you do them in winter, make sure to have the Agrabond fabric so that they don't freeze. And really, I think Ms. Tackett might be able to explain that better.
I guess probably what Sarah is saying is the seed doesn't cost very much money, the raised bed, you know, ultimately, the fact that it's going to be there from year after year, it's not a huge investment either. But you don't want to plant those seeds and then have the weather get really cold, down to 12 degrees, without the Agrabond fabric. So you would definitely want to make a plan to have that in place. And the vegetables are much better in taste.
I'd just like to touch on something Mrs. Tackett brought up about cost. You know, for some people, what we're describing sounds like it might take some money. But I encourage people to partner with organizations that are in their community. And Tracy would probably be better at speaking to some of those different organizations. But in this case, it was just a matter of she attended one of my gardening workshops and contacted me later. And we established a collaboration. And since I had a lot of seeds anyway that I was growing for market, planting, it was nothing for me to take a few seeds out of each packet to donate to the school garden. And Tracy's done a great job in finding ways to tap into other resources in her community. So don't neglect that you might have resources right there in your neighborhood that would enable you to do this with very little cost from the school itself.
Well, I can mention a couple of our huge supporters, one being our Pike County Soil Conservation District Board. I just went to them and told them what we were doing, and they immediately were excited and said, "How can we help? We want to partner with you." I asked for a compost bin. I ended up getting way more than a compost bin. They bought all of the tools, the hand tools, the hose, the rakes, the shovels, the trowels, and all of the peat moss that we could mix into the soil to improve our soil quality. So, you know, we are so appreciative to those community members who think this is a worthwhile endeavor. Also, Sustainable Pike County donated the materials for the hoops, the PVC pipe for our raised beds. And then the East Kentucky Pride. Anyone living in the East Kentucky region should check out the East Kentucky Pride, because they do offer little grants, and they recently recognized us as the December Project of the Month. And I think they would be just thrilled to get to sponsor any school that wanted to start a project like this. And it doesn't take a huge amount of money. It doesn't take a huge amount of work. Once it's initially set up, you just plan activities for your students to go outside and plant. You plan activities to go outside and harvest. And it's very much worth every bit of time and effort you put into it.
Thanks. I really appreciate that energy. It comes through not just in the project, but in the way you talk about it. And I do think that's one of the appealing things about this, is that unlike a greenhouse or even a high tunnel, it does seem it's within reach of many people, especially with a little bit of assistance or some materials. I think that this is a compelling model. And again, if you're listening to this, be sure to either search for some of these projects online or come back to the WMMT or Community Farm Alliance websites in the next couple of weeks, and we'll have links to this low tunnel, which really is a technology that's grassroots in its in the sense that it's something that most anybody could build in their own garden with the resources they have at hand. And while I'm mentioning Community Farm Alliance, I would like to mention that this conversation is part of a larger project called Breaking Beans, and you can use that as a hashtag if you put the words together on Facebook, where you can see stories from throughout Eastern Kentucky that tell the story of how local food and farming in Eastern Kentucky can contribute to a bright future here in the mountains. And so again, you can look for a hashtag called Breaking Beans. And there's also a Community Farm Alliance website, cfaky.org. And before we part today, we'll give everyone a chance again to mention the names of the websites where you should look to find some more specific information about the project we've been talking about, which is the Pikeville Elementary School Garden, and also these low tunnels that have been used to allow the garden to continue throughout the winter. And so as we wrap up, I'd like to give everyone a chance to say one more thing, and it might be some sense for our listeners that are, again, thinking about how we've heard a lot about the challenges our region face, and we know that our public schools, like our other public and community institutions, play an important role in kind of how we see ourselves and how we move forward. And you guys have a really positive energy, and have certainly accomplished a lot. And feel free to pass, but I would love to hear some words of advice from each person around the table to somebody that's hearing this and considering whether it's a good idea to try to start a school garden or maybe a garden at their home, or considering whether to offer their experience or resources if they've got some of those things to a school near them. So in a world where we're hearing a lot about the difficulties in Eastern Kentucky, what are your advices for people that are trying to consider whether they should get involved in a community project like you all? And we'll start with Tracy, if you don't mind.
I would say if you're a teacher and you want to experiment with a school garden, start small. You can have one raised bed, or you may have just a huge flower pot and you want to experiment this one next fall. Buy one pack of seeds, and of course you can make a low tunnel very inexpensively that way, and just try it. And from that, your project will grow on its own. It's kind of like we planted seeds in our garden, but then the project grew along with the garden. So take it. Don't try to do something too big all at once. Start small. Find someone in your community that is willing to lend you a helping hand and be there when you have questions. It's great for me that I can send Kathy an email and within a day or two have a response that lets me know I'm either moving in the right direction or maybe I need to rethink what I was planning to do. And your community will come up and support you because there are people out there who are excited to see children learn about where their food is coming from and experiment with tasting something besides a processed Happy Meal. And you will never see your children more engaged in work, more excited to learn science and math, more excited to write an essay than you will if you get them out there in a hands-on project where they are vested and thoroughly learning life skills that are going to last them a lifetime.
Thanks. Sarah, any words for our listeners for tonight?
Yes, if you are doing this at home, do it with your kids. I wouldn't have tried many of these vegetables, I'm going to be honest, if it wasn't for getting to plant them with it. It is definitely something that I'll remember for my whole life. It's been a huge experience, and I'm so glad that I've got to be a part of it.
Thank you, Mary.
As a parent, I would definitely recommend checking out Mother of a Hubbard, the blog, because there is a wealth of information there that if you are interested, There's a lot of questions that will be answered there for you, and so that's definitely where I'll be checking out for this next season.
Oh, thanks, Mary. I'd just like to put out a word to farmers. Number one, this is technology that's easy. This is an opportunity that's doable for us here in Eastern Kentucky. And, you know, we shouldn't be having to ship our food in from California or Florida in the winter months. We can grow our own right here in Eastern Kentucky. So I hope you'll see this as a big opportunity for you. The other thing I'd like to say to you is reach out to your schools. They need mentors. And I'm certainly glad that I did it. I've not only made a good friend in the process, but I've really come to enjoy what I do at the school with the students. So don't be hesitant to maybe you contact the school first and just extend a helping hand to see if there is anyone there that needs your help.
Thank you. We've been speaking tonight with Sarah Belcher, Mary Belcher, Tracy Tackett, and Dr. Kathy Raymeyer about the Pikeville Elementary School Garden. This has been Mountain Talk, also presented with help from the Community Farm Alliance Breaking Beans Project. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all of you all for being our guests tonight on Mountain Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.